afternoon. You're in the huddle right here. 101.3 ESPN, all accounted for. Brady's here. Rich is here. Arnie is here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy?
I'm ready and ripped.
Wow. Oh, you are ripped.
Ripped and ready.
You are.
Well, I blew the line. I practiced it for the whole hour.
You're not going to be ripped anymore if you keep eating the M&Ms.
Well, I'd appreciate it if you'd stop bringing them in. How many days in a row does this make?
That bag was supposed to last us all week.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was.
With five of us
in here. It was. It's supposed to be a bag for 10 to last for a week.
I'm sorry. I can't help myself. If there are M&Ms in front of me.
Brady's eating most of it.
I had like four of them.
It's like not me.
No, I value
me.
Well, I value my workout.
Well, yes, let's see. I have 863 calories to kill to get back to zero from earlier today. So I'm at about 200.
I don't know how you can value your workouts when I heard a rumor that my wife kicked your ass on the treadmill.
Not true.
<I don't know. laughs> Maybe he was a little tired from golfing yesterday.
Your wife told me that her knee hurt and then proceeded to run at like a 10 speed.
I don't know what she's doing.
Does your knee really hurt or no?
Her knee?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea.
I can barely remember her name.
Yeah, give me a break there. Jeez,
I'm just saying.
Know.
She tells me her knee hurts and then tries to sprint like Usain Bolt.
I know. I don't know what's wrong
so
with
her. So does your knee hurt or does it not? Or is she just trying to say that she played through the pain so that she looked even better for beating
me? If it hurt, she wouldn't be running like that, like a lunatic. Hey, she's 55. I mean, come on now. If she runs 10, you should be able to run 20. Come on now.
The speed only goes up to 12.
Is that all it goes up to?
Yes.
Damn.
Because that's like Olympic-level sprinting. I say only goes up to 12. That's like Olympic-level sprinting.
12. Oh, I love it. Hey, I got to tell you a great story. I'm on my way here to work. I'm in a red light, right? I got a nice SUV to my left.
Yeah.
Right? Before I can go straight, obviously, the cars are making left-hand turns. The light is turning yellow. Along comes this truck making a left-hand turn. I mean, one of those long ones with the long beds. So by the time he gets through the intersection, the light has turned green for us, right? I mean, one of those long ones. It took him a long time to get through because, I mean, it was one of the, you know, tough to maneuver. The car behind him decides he's going to go too. And I'm like, whoa, that's kind of ballsy. You know what I mean? Whoa. The third car goes through. All right. Now you went from laughing to, are you kidding me?
Was everybody safe?
Everybody's safe.
Idiots.
The guy to my left lays on the horn. Like you wouldn't believe. At the second guy.
Right.
The third guy, I could see his face. He's going to blow his top. So listen to this. He decides he's going after him. And I'm like, no, come on. Let's everybody calm down.
So I get out of his vehicle after
him?
No,
like he's going to make a right turn in front of me.
Okay.
From the left turn, from the left side, he's going to make a right turn in front of me when I'm going straight. Okay. Okay, there's three lanes. There's a right hand turn. He's going to go through all the traffic to go after these three guys. So I'm like, you're not doing it, buddy. I inch my car up. He looks at me and gives me a death stare like, are you serious? You're going to block me?
I hope it was somebody we played basketball with.
Oh, boy.
Somebody who knows you.
No. He looked at me like, you're going to block the intersection? I'm not blocking. I'm supposed to go straight, but I just wouldn't let him make a big left-hand turn.
Where was this?
Williston, where the Friendlies is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All so he's looking at me like, yeah, I don't think so. Boom, flips the lights on. The whole car lights up. It's a cop. It's a cop. And he looks at me. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't know. Maybe he's a special cop. Do they usually drive dark SUVs?
They can drive just about anything now. They're very much more stealth than they used
to be. It wasn't just like lights on. It was like the whole car was lighting up like a clown car. Zzzz. And he looks at me like, you have about a second to move out of the bleeping intersection, or I'll take you down too with the three that just crossed the intersection. He was hissed off. He was just going to go straight. He was in a hurry. I could tell he was in a hurry.
Yep.
But when the third car came through, he honked at the second one. The third one, he couldn't take it anymore, and he was going after him. So,
how many times in a day do you see a situation of utter stupidity behind the wheel, and you go, geez, I wish there was a cop here.
Oh.
Well, you got your wish.
Well, how about twice today, did we not?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, that's right, when we came out of Orange Theory.
We came out of Orange Theory. I was talking to Rich, and
we're just soaked.
Oh, we're just soaked. Yeah. And Rich says something to me, and the guy goes, well, that's why you're on the radio. I'm like, uh-oh. He's going to wait for us and give us a ticket. He knows who we are. He was picking up some food.
Yeah, it was a cop in
full uniform. He had, what, some donuts with him? Oh, no, it was a joke. Come on, it's a joke. It's a joke,
that's
sir.
That's Arnie Spanier.
Officer, that was a joke, sir. That the was a weighed, joke. Was, Brady told me to say that.
That guy was ripped. He weighed about 130 pounds. And
was totally
ripped.
Muscle. Oh, my goodness. I felt like he could take his thumb and beat up Rich. Just with his thumb alone. And he, what was he talking? I ran away because I was afraid we were going to get arrested. Well, so I just kind of ran away.
I mean, I can't even imagine what we must have looked like. These two old fat guys just completely covered in sweat out of Orange
But
Theory.
You were talking to him a little bit longer.
Well, that's because I like to talk.
Right. I asked him for his ticket book.
Yeah.
Oh, I would see if that's all I want to do.
Wouldn't that be great?
Oh,
and a blue light to put on top of
I need
car.
To be in charge, like Starsky and Hutch. I need to be in charge of driving around Burlington and just giving people moving violations.
Right.
I need that to be my job.
You could be in charge of the stupid people.
Oh, that is me.
I could just sit there at the Winooski Circle all day and give out 1,000 tickets.
I am telling you, I so badly want to do that as a job. I just give me your ticket book. And I did that in New Orleans when a police officer was giving me a ride from my show to the French Quarter at 2 in the morning. And there was this knucklehead double park blocking us. I go, give him a damn ticket. And we gave him a ticket.
Nice.
The power.
Yeah.
Oh.
I agree. That would be a bucket list checkoff if I ever saw one day where I had a pile of tickets and a blue light to put on the top of my car and just stop for a few minutes the utter stupidity that I see in this town.
I may just buy a blue light and put on my car anyway.
That is your bucket list?
Absolutely.
You know, I want
to. Do you understand
writing
how
traffic
much,
tickets is your bucket
one
list?
Crime, the one, and it's not even a crime, but it could be, that I completely get is road rage. I completely get it. I read about these people coming together and wanting to almost beat each other up. I get it.
I
absolutely feel it.
One of my guests from on Fox Sports Radio, I don't want to say his name, Olden Polonese. Remember the former NBA player?
Played for the Clippers and Kings, at least.
He got in trouble for doing that, for going after somebody that ran a red light or something and flashed a badge, which was an honorary badge, but he used it as a real badge, pretending he was a police officer. They're like, no, Olden, that's a honorary badge. You don't get to pull people over. You know, he started pulling people over with that. I just love that.
That would be one of the better days of my life.
Oh,
just sit at the Winooski traffic circle and just nail people.
Oh.
If that is the best thing you have to look forward to in life, then I'm questioning what else you have to look forward to.
Tristan said, Tristan Wilson, I envision Arnie Moore as a Paul Blart mall cop. Yes.
Yes,
on the segue.
Like,
give me one
like
of those. Brady, what's coming up on the show today? We got a lot going on. What's happening?
We got lots going on. Your wife is yelling at me.
Yes,
she says,
she is.
I can't run at elevation. My knees are old from skiing and tennis. I'm on an incline. It causes too much pressure. I'm just saying.
Shame on you, Brady.
She ran at a 10 speed.
My wife's 108. You should be able to beat her, Brady. Please, come on.
She looked pretty healthy to me. That's all I'm saying. As for what's coming up this week, remember, trivia is tonight at the Burger Bar in Colchester. Come see us 7:30 to 9:30. Tomorrow, we're getting another qualifier for the Labatt Crush It at Okemo weekend. We'll be out at Olive Ridley's in Plattsburgh.
Nice.
Arnie, you'll be there also.
Yes.
That's not a Beatles song, is it? Oh, no, that's Eleanor Rigby.
Right. No, but Olive Ridley's is a happening place.
All right, close enough.
Remember, the Labatt Crush It Okemo weekend qualifier is for you, three friends, Okemo Mountain, ziplining, mountain biking, a Yeti cooler, filled with Labatt. Thursday, we'll be out at Rerod downtown, thanks to Sam Adams giving away Sox tickets. And Friday's the best weekend of the summer. We will be there broadcasting live from the Travis Roy Wiffle Ball Tournament. And Arnie, get some batting practice in before, because I don't need you striking out again this year.
I don't know if I could play Friday night, but I'm definitely.
You don't know if you could play Friday night.
Why not? That's a third of the games for us.
I know, because I got Phil in at Fox at.
We're on the
o'clock.
Air there.
Well, until 6. But
you're on the air at 11 o'clock.
Yes, but we have a game at 8.
Just take. Since when do you get the schedule and we don't have it?
I looked it up online on the computer.
Are you expecting a 23-inning affair on Friday night?
No, but then I'm done by 9 and rush over to get home by 10.
Take two showers.
I don't know.
Just use the same show plan from our show.
Wow.
And use it on your national show.
I did have the one Manziel answer on my show on Saturday.
Did you?
Yeah. You could hear you two clowns laughing in the background.
What do you mean? So wait,
a billion?
Yeah.
So you used our Johnny Manziel show on the national?
The one question on the Manziel was my question I asked.
Okay.
But don't you have to credit this station for that?
Yeah, I think I am supposed to. I don't think I did. I don't think I did, but.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, I see a.
Well, they said, Artie, you had Johnny Manziel on. I said, yes, I did. I just took credit for it by myself.
And you booked him, too. I'm sure.
I'm sure, yes. Didn't you read the Town Fair Tire text line that said, good job, Arnie? Come
time
on.
Time to lawyer up, Brady.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Mistake of the day is Arnie telling us that, because now I'm angry.
By the way, Alex and Moncton said you could use the entire ticket book on cyclists not following the rules of road.
Oh, I'm not going to touch that.
Yeah, Rich, do you put your arm out to the side whenever you're turning?
I am literally never on a street. I am on a rail trail or a bike path at all times. The rules are a little easier when there's no cars.
Look at Iron Charlotte. Artie, if you didn't want us to know who your guest was, why did you say Olden Polonese was your guest? My bad. I'm sorry. Right, just forget I said that.
Mistake of the Day is brought to you by Embroidery Works at Joanne's Uniforms in Colchester, helping small businesses with screen printing, embroidery, and vehicle lettering to get it right the first time. As for today, UVM is headed for a new university president. What could the impact be on athletics? Tom Karen of Nesson at 435.
A
Yankees broadcaster. Is it hot water with one of the players? Jason Fitz of ESPN is part of our fantasy football week at 520. 32 teams in 33 days. But first, Arnie, you and I are on the same wavelength today. Yeah. We both saw this from our buddy Henry McKenna over at Patriots Wire, which is a USA Today offshoot.
Zesty Patriots?
No,
okay.
He says that the Patriots should trade for Aaron Donald. And on the surface, you look at that and say, okay, that's a great move. Aaron Donald's arguably the best defensive player in the NFL, could even be the top player in the NFL. And then you just think about, his last year of his deal, he's holding out. Is he a good guy? How much money would it cost? I'm telling you right now, the deal he proposed, I would do in a heartbeat to bring Aaron Donald to New
Again, I'm not sure the financials that he's going to want, right? Before we even get into that, yes, I'm just simple. Do I want somebody like that? Absolutely. I do hesitate to bring in somebody like him because I'm more of a let's spend on the skill position players, let's spend on the quarterback, let's spend on the wide receiver. I'll even kind of spend on a running back if it doesn't get too out of hand. Otherwise, I'll go out and get another one. I usually don't worry about defenses and stuff like that, though. With Aaron Donald, see, this is why, Brady, you can't have three running backs. This is why when you have a luxury of trying to carry three running backs instead of one, now you're tying up two other salaries. And I'm not saying you don't have two other running backs anyway, but high-priced ones. When you ask me, wouldn't you love three? Yeah, give me three great ones. Give me Ezekiel Elliott. Give me, you know, give me Le'Veon Bell. It's unrealistic. That's why if I had one running back, maybe I would have the financials to really bring in an Aaron Donald because I do want him. And I want him bad. And if the Patriots bring him, all of a sudden they are the clear-cut favorite for the Super Bowl. I mean, that's what a difference maker he is, except for the fact is people don't want to pay him that type of money.
No, and it's interesting because the Rams spent so much money on the offense. What was it, $80 million of guaranteed money to Todd Gurley, who probably deserves it, but Brandon Cooks for some reason
They're catching some grief over that.
Oh, absolutely. But they bring in Ndamukong Suh. They give him $14 million. They re-upped with Aqib Talib, I think, for $11 million. So, I mean, they're doing a little bit on the defensive side of the ball, but are they lowballing their best defensive player and probably the best defensive, most impactful defensive player in the whole league?
I mean, lowballing, they're not even coming to the table with an offer. He wants to be the highest paid defensive player in the league. He wants to surpass what Von Miller's making. Okay, that's $19.1 million.
He wants to be paid like a quarterback.
Von Miller got $70 million guaranteed. He wants to be paid more than that. And he is the best defensive player in the NFL. And I do think, Arnie, that the deal that Henry McKenna proposed, he said he would give up Malcolm Brown, defensive tackle. Who, look, yes, he's going to play for the Patriots, but he's not an impact
player. I'll get another one.
Yeah. He takes up a lot of space is what he does.
Get another one.
So Malcolm Brown, and then next year, they're the Patriots first and one of the Patriots thirds. Oh. And the Patriots have three third-round picks next year as of right now. I'd give up Malcolm Brown a first and a third for Aaron Donald, assuming you can re-sign him.
It's not who you have to give up. It's all about the money afterwards. I mean, do you want to go and tie up that type of money to a guy like this? Is he going to be the cornerstone of your franchise? Are you going to make him the face of the franchise after Tom Brady's around? Or are you going to make sure you have somebody like this around when Tom Brady's here? That's a lot of dinero. Where are you going to save from? Where are you going to go ahead and make? Because somebody's got to lose money. There go your three running back idea. And there's going to be a hell of a lot more that's got to be cut. You know, when you buy yourself a fancy car and you can't really afford it, you got to make cuts, you know, somewhere else in the household. Maybe you can't get cable. Maybe you can't go out to dinner. You got to come up with about three, four different ways to save some money here.
And this doesn't seem like financially anyway, the so-called Patriot way. I mean, they just aren't, you know, hell, they don't even pay. What's Brady, the 15th highest quarterback or 5th, 10th or whatever it is? I mean, and he agrees to that. But it doesn't seem like the Patriots have ever been that team that says, quick, let's get a major superstar at the height of his game and bring him in here and just break the bank.
I just think that it's a move that you have to make because we're talking about Tom Brady potentially retiring after this year. Some people are saying they think he could be retired after this year. So the moves that you make this year, look, and you know, Arnie, you know who I am at my core. I'm about, hey, let's acquire the draft picks. Let's keep the prospects. Let's get younger. Let's be cost effective. I'm all for all of that. But when you have Tom Brady and you have no clear discernible plan after him at quarterback, you better take your shot to win while you know he's here. And we know he's here right now. I want Aaron Donald for this season with the best chance to give the team a chance to win.
What's to say that you trade for him and Aaron Donald says, okay, give me my extension or I'm not coming in to your camp?
No, I believe that. I believe that would happen. But yeah. I'm saying you got to take that risk in order to try to win one more with Tom Brady.
And
if Tom Brady does retire, then you lose all of his money off the book, and that's where you're going to save some of your Aaron Donald money for.
Let's slow down before, you know, until I can talk to the guy before I'm going to make a trade, and he's going to tell me, hey, well, I'm still not coming
in. You can't talk to him before the trade.
I will talk to his agent. I'll find out if this guy is serious, what's it going to take. And let me tell you something. The Rams weren't allowed that today. You want to make a trade? I said, let me speak to his agent. What's it going to take? Is he going to hold out if we trade for him, if we tell him we're going to negotiate in good faith? What's it going to take to get him in the play right away? I've got to know that before I pull the trigger. I mean, look, maybe I don't have to know it as a talk show host, but I certainly got to know it as a member of the New England Patriots.
And is Aaron Donald the guy to, you know, basically have a salary dump for the Rams? I mean, I look at this trade on paper, and if I'm being a Pats fan, of course I do it. Malcolm Brown is a dime a dozen defensive lineman. The 2019 first-round pick will be probably, let's face it, about the 30th pick, because it always is. And then a couple of third-rounders that they already have three of waiting in the wings. If I'm a Pats fan, forgetting the money, this is a complete no-brainer.
Well, you can't forget the money.
I understand that because, but I mean, do the Rams really want to mess around with Donald of all people?
No, they don't, they're already doing it. They acquired Aqib Talib. They're paying $11 million for him coming back over from his salary from Denver. They paid that $14 million you talked about in Ndamukong Suh. They have paid at every position except for Aaron Donald.
Why? Because let's be honest.
Because right now Jared Goff's making nothing, and they want to try to capitalize on that.
I don't even think that's it. Let's be honest. They have one of the best owners in all of sports. What's Stan Kroenke, right? This guy is building a stadium with his own money. Do you understand that? Do you know what this guy has? Let's pull up, Brady, pull up his name and see how much money he's got to his name. There's Jerry Jones. They don't even have half the money this guy's got. Matter of fact, this guy's got all the dough in the world. If I got 10 bucks in my pocket, it's because he let me have it.
Yeah, don't let the people of St. Louis hear about Stan Kroenke.
Oh, my
money.
Goodness. Oh. This guy is filthy rich. I mean, there's rich, and then there's stupid rich. And this guy makes stupid rich look crazy.
What does that have to do with it? Because
you know what? He'll go over the tax. He'll go over whatever it takes. He'll go pay as much as it takes. He doesn't care. He's building that stadium. You think?
Can you go over the salary cap in the NFL?
I thought there was a penalty for it, but let me tell you something. He doesn't care. Look what he's building now. Money is no object to somebody like this. That's why I can't understand why they're playing hardball. I didn't know that they were going to go ahead and do something
like this. Well, like I said, the Patriots have based so much of their philosophy, and it's worked for them. Why mess with something that's worked for 18 years? Yeah, they got lucky with the Brady draft pick in the sixth round in 2000, but they insert guys that they can afford into spots, and they make it work within the system.
Brady, you have to be able to go over what happens, you know, with injuries or what happens when you're coming into a season. Remember, the Patriots were down to their last, $2 or something like that. What happens if somebody gets hurt? They have to got to sign somebody, but yet their money's all guaranteed for the year. I mean, there's emergencies. There's stuff that you've got to go ahead and do. So, look, if you got the money, you want to bring in Aaron Donald, but let me tell you something. Kraft doesn't have the money that this guy has. I don't know. I don't know the whole story. I think his wife passed away, and then he got everything. I forget what she was the heiress to. I'll have to look at the break. But he's got a boatload of money. When we come back, UVM is going to get a new president. I've got a lot of thoughts about that. We'll give you the over-under on what the Boston Celtics is, as we even give you a little NBA. All that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Mistake of the day, and it's by me. I haven't had a mistake of the day in like a year and a half. Brian in Richmond, no Arnie NFL is a hard cap, no going over, period. Brady, you looked that up. That is true.
It is true. You cannot go over. You can get it. If you do go over, it's a $5 million fine. Potential cancellation of the contract that puts you over, and loss of draft picks.
I did look up Stan Kroenke. On a ski trip to Aspen, Colorado, Kroenke met his future wife, Ann Walton.
Ah, Walton.
You've heard that name before, Rich?
Yeah, they've got some money.
She is the Walmart heiress. They married in 1974, already wealthy from real estate. He accrued a significant addition wealth when he and Ann inherited a stake of Walmart stores upon the 1995 death of her father, James Walton. As of September 2015, that stake is worth $4.8 billion, give or take. So I save about $5 billion for Stan Kroenke there.
It's like the same amount of listeners you have on your national show.
No, you got more money than I got listeners. That's how crazy it is. Yeah, barely, though, barely. So there's the story on Stan Kroenke. All right, Brady, get to UVM. I thought this was a fascinating story. They're going to get a new president in 2019.
Yep. So this will be the last year for President Tom Sullivan, who announced yesterday that he will step out of his role as UVM's president effective next summer. The real question is right now we're in the middle of trying to get the new arena completely financed, the new basketball arena, the completely refurbished Gutterson Fieldhouse. So there's that project. And then there's just athletics as a whole. The new president could have a major impact on athletics. What do you how big do you think it could be?
Well, I think it'd have a significant impact. I'm going to make sure my new president's going to be great at fundraising. He's got to make sure that this is go. That has to be the number one option, is to finish that to get that going and to get that finished. And you know, I said this to you guys before, as they're bringing in a new president in 2019. You know, you guys argued with me when I said that they should go to a bigger conference and that UVM should become a bigger school and just grow. Yes. You know, I think you guys are lacking vision here. It's kind of like Burlington. You know, when we vote just on our, you know, local elections, people talk about, you know, Burlington's growing so much. You have to have the vision to see how much it's growing and to make the changes. Like the traffic that we had down on North Street. Remember when that was a big thing? Should we expand North Street? You know, you have to have the vision to know how many cars are going up there. Sooner or later, we're going to have to make a decision on that bridge, right? So many people are going to want to come to Burlington. You know, maybe we don't want that ferry anymore. I'd put a bridge right to downtown Burlington. $5, and you're laughing.
Well, I'm laughing. I could see Ray Pecor's reaction, that the owner of the ferries.
$5 each way, and then when I pay off the bridge after that, I start using the money for right here in Burlington. So, and the reason I bring all this stuff is the new president has to have a vision to grow UVM. And to grow it more than just 10,000 students or whatever it is, to grow it more than the America East and that conference. And I know you think that's crazy, but it's time. You have to have that vision to grow.
So my first question upon, you just said about 19 things in 30 seconds.
Yes.
First of all, are taxpayers paying for said bridge that would probably cost somewhere in the range of $1 billion, if not more?
No, Ben and Jerry are going to pay for it. No, of course. That's why I'm putting the $5 toll each way. Once the bridge...
$5?
That's 10 bucks round trip. Once that pays off the bridge, then I start using... Look, that's why they have tolls in New York or Dallas and stuff like that. They've paid off those roads 50 years ago, but they never took the tolls away. We keep the tolls and we use the money here in Burlington. You know, you got to have that vision. Yeah, I should be running for office here. Arnie for office 2018.
So you think there's enough traffic on Interstate 87 that wants to come over to Burlington? I mean, they're going to Montreal or they're going to somewhere
from
south.
From Plattsburgh.
There's not enough people to be able to build a bridge that far.
Yeah, Rich, you don't have the vision.
Are you talking about Cumberland Head to Grand Isle, the ferry route? Because that's shorter.
Listen, have the vision that I have right to downtown Burlington. Right to...
You're insane.
We're on the spot on the dock. It's right there.
Billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Billions.
Yeah, Rich, that's
why... That's about a 10-mile bridge across Lake Champlain.
It's going to come whether you like it or not, big boy.
Not in this lifetime. Anyway,
Brady, go ahead.
I already asked the question. Are you going to give an answer?
Yeah.
I mean, so
no. I said. I started off by saying that obviously athletics is very important, but you have to have the vision to grow, to get the stadium, to build it, to make sure you have the fundraising, to make sure you know that University of Vermont is going to be bigger and better than you could even imagine now. So you need that type of president in here.
One, I would imagine that President Tom Sullivan, kind of like when a president leaves office in the United States, they make sure they get in all the things that they want right before they leave office, before the new guy comes in. I have to imagine that Tom Sullivan, I mean, they're already fundraising for this project. They already have a lot of money raised for this project, and they're expecting to be shovels in the ground by next year. I imagine that he's going to be integral in finding the next president and making sure that this renovation of Gutterson Fieldhouse and that the building of the new Patrick Gym Complex is a priority and is happening. I can't imagine he's going to bring in someone that doesn't want to do this. Right. They're already pushing towards this. It's not a definite at this point, but I'm operating under the assumption that it's a definite. I don't think they're going to go the other way on it. So that's number one. And then number two, they just have to find a president that understands the value of athletics to the to the alumni community, to the prospective student community, to the current student community, to the townspeople. And then also there's the wellness piece of it too, if you're a current non-student athletes, but just traditional students. They need someone who understands and recognizes that athletics is important, and it can be a major gateway for UVM to the rest of the nation.
That's the easy answer. We all just gave the easy answer. If we're all president, great. We all want the stadium. We all want to grow UVM. Let's take it to the next step, Brady. You just said the importance of athletics. Are you bringing back baseball? Are you bringing football? You just told me the importance of athletics. Are you bringing that, Rich? You love baseball. You know, I see those damn signs. Bring it back. Bring it back. Am I going to bring it back? I don't know if I can afford football. That's why you got to have the vision, not only for the stadium, but to grow Vermont into, you laughed at me about leaving the American East. I want football back. I want baseball back. This could be a major university. I don't know. You think that we're going to be just a little cow town? Look what they're doing in Williston and building there. You got to have the vision to think what the university is going to be in 20 years from now, not just next year or the year after. That's why you need football. That's why you need baseball, Brady.
My first thought when I heard there was going to be a new president is the Bring It Back crew must be awfully happy. I think a lot of that goes through the athletic department, first of all. But if the president comes in and says, are you kidding me? There isn't a football and a baseball team at this huge university?
Yeah.
You better believe something's going to happen. So I remember the guy, I think it was before President Sullivan, I think it was Dan Fogel. He was an LSU guy, as I recall. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't know.
And so everybody was like, oh, man, he must be huge into sports. And I mean, you know what LSU is with sports. And it just never materialized.
The one thing that I love, Arnie, the one thing I think is going to surprise people first and foremost is I don't think they should bring back baseball. I just don't think logistically it makes a lot of sense. Now, I wouldn't have gotten rid of it, but since it's not here now, I wouldn't bring it back. I don't think it makes a lot of sense, and it's a very cost.
Nobody cared.
It's not so much. No,
that's true.
That's an easy answer, too. It's not so much that they don't care. Why don't they care, Rich? Because the weather's so bad, you can't play here.
Yep. Play in a snowstorm.
But that's the reason why you don't bring back baseball. You could bring in football.
You know programs like St. John's, Albany, they have good baseball programs.
Albany stinks. They're horrible.
I saw them in the... Didn't I see them?
Yeah, 10 years ago, okay. They made it to their super regional.
So you're saying because of the proximity, you know, you could build the... A dome, again, a vision to
look
past
that. Maybe right next to the 10-mile bridge.
You laughed at, but where are you going to play football also? But if you don't think that baseball, you know, you said the importance of athletics, what would you do with football? Would you bring that back or bring that up here?
That's more realistic by far. One,
really?
Because of the weather. Two, because of the money that it would bring into the university just from bringing in 80 players that are not all of them are on scholarship paying tuition to be here. It would be a lot of money for the university.
Well, you're going to have more than 10,000 kids. Again, eight, nine, 10, you've got more than 10,000
I would
kids.
Imagine that a football team at UVM would draw great interest. They could go 0-12 for five consecutive seasons and they'd fill whatever they had.
I agree.
They absolutely would. I think there's a real interest in that. I don't see it as much in baseball, but keep in mind, baseball is a hell of a lot cheaper than football. That's been part of the problem since they undefeated since 74, the football program.
James,
because it's so expensive.
James in South Burlington, right off the bat, probably going to vote for me. He says the bridge is a great idea. Loves it, $50 for a family. You have round trip, cash toll. Burlington is losing out on taxes. Way to go on that one. I totally agree. Shane in Burlington, Arnie, college football is dead. And in New England, they're better off keeping the money in hockey and basketball. Ira in Charlotte, UVM does have a club football team.
Yes, they do.
And Mike says, bring it back, talking about baseball.
Yep.
We'll come back. We'll get to Tom Caron. We'll talk to him. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Good afternoon, everybody. Yeah, well, you don't like my bridge.
Let's ask TC.
No, don't ask TC about the bridge.
Idea.
You know, you're lucky I'm not running for governor or anything like that. Joining us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line, as he does every week from Nesson, it's Tom Caron. How you doing, TC?
That's Slim Shady?
Yes, it is.
You like that?
Like is a strong word. I don't feel like around easily.
Well, I know you like the 4-game sweep. How was that, man? How great was that?
Well, that was something, wasn't it?
Oh.
I haven't seen anything like that in a long, long time. None of us have. To answer the critics the way that they were building and the whole they can't beat a good team and that whole narrative, they just put a hurting on the Yankees, and it was stunning to watch how effortlessly. Yeah, I don't want to say effortlessly because I can't say the word apparently. You're down 4-0 early on in Game 1 on the Friday night, and then you get up off the mat, you score the next 14 runs, and you never look back. I mean, they played 37 innings, and the Yankees led at the end of five of them. It was completely just dominating and stunning, and I mean, they pretty much put that division away.
Oh. And to me, TC, the biggest takeaway for me was just the various ways they did it. I mean, what was your takeaway from those wins?
Well, yeah, I mean, the back-to-back starting pitching that, you know, Porcello and Eovaldi, and, you know, it made you realize what a good pickup Eovaldi was. And I think the big takeaway for me was, you know, the additions that they've made, how important they were. You know, Steve Pierce with the three home runs in game one and another in game two. You know, before he went on the DL, Kinsler made a couple of really nice defensive plays and had a couple of hits in game one and scored a run in game two. That's how he got hurt. And then Eovaldi just dominating on Sunday, or I guess that was Saturday. So I to me, it was all about that. You know, the moves that Dombrowski made have really paid off so far.
TC, are you buying David Price is over his Yankees problems? I've defended David Price all year, but I look at it and say he's pitching at home. The team already had all the momentum in the series, and he's pitching against the watered-down Yankees lineup. I like David Price, but I'm not buying that performance gets him over his Yankees issues.
Yeah, I'm with you a little bit there. I think that, you know, they had done a pretty good job of taking all the pressure off of David Price, because they won the first three games, they took care of business, and so it just there was no pressure on him. I would have liked to see, and I don't usually disagree with Alex Cora, I think he's done a great job. I would have liked to see him done after six innings and make that a feel-good night for him across the board. But I'm with you. He'll still have to answer the bell when he faces them late in the year and then in the playoffs.
You know, TC, something we're going to be getting into next hour, Michael Kay and Clint Frazier, a little bit of disagreement about what Michael had said about his injury. Do you have to be, you know, extra special careful when you're talking about a player's injury? And any player take what you say wrong and kind of take exception to it?
Well, I mean, you know, what's happened is we have these HIPAA laws that have gone into effect over the last 10 years or so. And you do have to be a little careful because of the privacy laws surrounding patients and diagnoses. And you do have to be careful. You know, there are times where, you know, the team says upper body injury, and I might have knowledge of a little more specificity of what the injury is, but I can't and won't go with it because you can't violate the laws that surround a patient and a player or any person who's dealing with a medical issue. So it can be a little bit thorny. I think that's a relatively new development over the last 10 years or so.
Wow.
TC, were you surprised Alex Cora went out there on Friday night and got ejected knowing full well he would be ejected if he took a few more steps?
Well, I didn't like the way the umpire handled it, first of all. Let the guy get out there and have, you know, talk to him a little bit and then say, all right, that's enough. He's like, don't even come out here. Don't even come out. Why? You know he's going to come out there. And I agree. And umpires always argue when you have a quick warning. And I think, you know, I think it was a very quick warning for both teams. So, no, I wasn't surprised. I mean, if you're going to, you know, it's the first time he's been thrown out all year. And I think it was a good time to do it because, hey, kind of came out there and showed the team he had their back. And I love what the mics picked up, him yelling, that's the best player in baseball. And you're throwing it at his head. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Tom Karen, Red Sox insider at Nesson with us on the Huddle, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. The team's closing in on 80 wins. They can get it tonight if they beat the Blue Jays. Do they have any interest, should they have any interest, in going after the Major League record of 116?
No, I mean, they should have interest in winning as many games as they can, but that shouldn't matter to them one bit. And there's a pretty good chance that by the end of this year, now that they have the separation, which I never thought they'd get at this point, that, you know, I could easily see them locking things up and resting guys down the stretch. You know, you should care about winning the division. You should care about home field advantage. You should care about the best record in baseball. But if that's 105, then that's great. The franchise record is 105. They don't really have to work that hard to get it, just a little bit above 500. But the Major League record shouldn't matter to them at all.
Yeah. Hey, TC, tell me about this new second baseman they got, Mookie Betts. Wow. What did you think about him in second base?
That. I don't think you'll be seeing a whole lot of that. But yeah. I love that. He's the one who told Ron Renicki, I'm going in there, you need a second baseman, I'll do it. And I love that the first ball hit comes.
Yeah.
Up to him. He's got a smile from ear to ear the whole time. I thought the whole thing was fun.
CC, I mean, injury issues have certainly cropped up recently, but do you get concerned, as the fans down there get concerned about the fact that this has just been such a joyride from day one as far as the team?
You're talking about, Chris Sale. You're talking about significant injuries. Now Kinsler joins the DL. You've been out without one of your catchers for a long time now. I mean, those are pretty significant. So I do think that that the fact that they haven't missed a beat, even as they keep getting the injuries piling up, it has been a joyride, and there's Chris Hill's a big one to me. You lose him and they don't miss a beat. You lose him and they go out and sweep the Yankees. I mean, it's incredible.
TC, we talked about the bullpen. Did they need to add at the deadline? Did they make a mistake not adding? Well, who the hell is Ryan Brazier? Where did this guy come from throwing 100 miles an hour?
Yeah, he's been a great find, no doubt about it. Played for the Angels a few years back and never really got another chance. Went to Japan after some injuries and made a little money and pitched well in Japan. And, it was a great look. They did a good job scouting him. They got their look and did their due diligence. And then they brought him to spring training, and everybody noticed him at spring training. And, you still got to be careful with where they're bringing him in games. I'm not throwing him in super high leverage situations regularly now, but again, that goes back to the beauty of the big lead in the division. You actually can experiment a little bit now. You can throw a guy out there in the eighth inning of a tight game and see what he does. And I think they'll be able to do that a little bit more now.
You know, TC, I know you take gospel what they say on sports talk radio, and we're going to bring this up tomorrow. But are other writers or sports talk radio people out there saying that the Red Sox are just a lucky team this year or what?
No, that'd be a stupid take.
No, actually, there is.
It's not, Arnie's paraphrasing incorrectly. It's not so much that they're lucky, they haven't had a lot of adversity. They've had good fortune that most teams just don't get.
But, I don't see where the lack of adversity comes through. They've had as many, the injuries have been as bad as anybody else. I mean, Mookie Betts was on the DL early in the season.
Yes, yes.
Bogaerts just got hit by a pitch. Their best pitcher, maybe the best pitcher in the American League, is on the DL right now. One of their two catchers, their number one catcher, has been on the DL for a while. And Dustin Pedroia is still supposed to be the second baseman, and he hasn't played all year pretty much. So, injuries are one type of adversity. The other stuff, if they haven't had it, it's because they haven't created it. And I think that's not lucky. I think that's a team taking care of business. The Yankees are a bit of a mess right now.
Yeah.
You had Phil Nevin, the coach, screaming at the young guys.
Yes.
And just over the weekend against the Red Sox, you had Aaron Hicks not run out of ground ball and Zach Britton not cover first base. And the third baseman, the rookie, throwing a ball down in the dirt that cost him the game. I mean, this is adversity that they are creating because there's some turmoil there. Because there's no turmoil in the Red Sox clubhouse, that's not being lucky. That's being good.
Ooh.
One of the things I've noticed they're doing, and they're probably going to finish with two guys with 30 or more steals, which, I mean, growing up in the 70s, my gosh, the guy would lead the team with six steals. Does the amount of running surprise you?
They were the most, slowest, most plodding team for decades. And now, at this point, they're leading the American League in stolen bases. They can do it all. Listen, they can, and they did it with the Yankees. They beat the Yankees to steal Bill Belichick's phrase in every facet of the game. They pitched better. They hit better. They had a better bullpen. They ran better. They did the little things better. They did the big things better. They were just better across the board.
Tom Karen of Nesson with us. TC, we'll get you out of here on this. The unfortunate news that came down about an hour before our show that Jerry Remy has been diagnosed with cancer again. Your colleague at Nesson. So first off, here's hoping that he gets better just because he's your friend and a friend of all the listeners, really. But tell us about Jerry. He's beaten it before, and we hope he does it again.
Yeah, absolutely. Our thoughts and prayers are with him. We've all stood by him for 10 years now. I talked to him, and it's hard to believe the first diagnosis was 10 years ago, and he's done such a great job fighting it. But it's persistent, and it battles, and he's had to battle it. And now his focus is going to be on his health and trying to beat it again. But it's heartbreaking news for us to lose him, for a day, let alone for any stretch of time, because, he's so important to us. He's been such a good friend to me and a mentor to me. It's devastating news. And even though I work with him, you know, I think most of New England feels like he's their friend too, because he's a guest in their home every night. And, you know, we've watched him for generations now. We really have. He's an iconic part of Boston and of the Red Sox experience. And any game or day without him is a loss. So we will miss him until he gets back.
Well said, TC. Always a pleasure. You know, we always love having you on, buddy. Enjoy the rest of the week, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Tom.
All right, take care. Tom Karen, TC, joining us as he does every Tuesday. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're far away with the Jerry Remy thing, but imagine what's going through his head. I mean, he's working with that guy face-to-face every single day, and it just... It's a tough opponent, to say the least.
I think this is the sixth time, if I'm not mistaken. It's incredibly sad. He's beaten it before. I have no idea if that gives you a better chance of beating it again, but he has done it before, so we are behind him for sure.
All right, thanks to Tom, Karen, for joining us. All right, coming up, we'll finish off hour number one, Gone But Not Forgotten, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Have you ever played, since we're listening to Thunderstruck, have you ever played Thunderstruck, the drinking game?
I have not.
No.
Do tell.
Oh, every time. So you're sitting in a circle, and every time the word thunder gets spoken, you take it, like, so if we're sitting in a circle, us three, I start drinking, the word thunder gets spoken, I stop drinking, now it goes to you. You drink until the thunder appears again. So one guy gets screwed at the end because there's that long guitar solo where nothing's getting said. So we're all drinking quickly, and the guy who gets screwed over is the guy who he says, thunder! Right. And then the guitar solo goes for like 45 seconds, and he's just chugging the entire time.
No, no, we're so old, we played Bob from the Bob Newhart Show. That's what we did. If you have to drink, you played Bob. Thanks to our friends over at Edwin Beignet Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington. Family's love is forever. Feel free to contact them. They're there 24-7 in your time of need. Elmwood Beignet even has affordable options for your pets. First one, give me a little music, because she just passed away. Was it yesterday or the day before? Charlotte Ray from the Facts of Life.
I know.
92 years old, not only from the Facts of Life, but from Different Strokes also. Yeah. There was only two living cast members from this Different Strokes, herself and Todd Bridges.
You take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and there you have the Facts of Life. The Facts of Life.
There you go.
There's a time you
she
gotta
was 92.
Go and
jump, the father on the show, Mr. Drummond, lived right by my parents. And I saw him walking on the street one time in the neighborhood. I go, Mr. Drummond! But I found out they don't like to be called by their TV name. You know?
Oh, imagine that. Yeah, I tried calling Bob Denver Gilligan when he came to Burlington 20 years ago.
They don't like that.
No, he didn't. But I had a massive crush on Nancy McKeon on that show.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
See, when we were young, it was okay back then.
Right.
Because we were young also. But
I thought it was just Ginger and Marianne.
No. That was a good show. 92 years old. And another one that you probably didn't hear today. This
you're
going
to steal mine. Go ahead.
Oh, then I'll let you do it.
Is it a hockey player?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, can I have that one?
You can have it. Go ahead.
Because he made my life a living hell. Although he wasn't a Montreal player. And those were mostly the Guy Lafleurs, Larry Robinsons of the world, who ruined my life as a Bruins fan growing up. But every time the Bruins had to deal with the Chicago Blackhawks, Stan Mikita was that guy. And Stan Mikita, member of the Hockey
Stan
Hall of Fame,
Mikita.
Died at the age of 78 today. Oof. Played almost 1,400 games. How about this? He played from 58 to 80, all in a Blackhawks uniform.
Wow.
Those were the days.
Wow.
Gone but not forgotten. Draft picks who say they're going to change when they get to the NFL. It's kind of not so much gone but not forgotten. Gone but not forgotten is common sense and sensibility. So you heard about the Browns receiver, Antonio Callaway?
Yes, I heard about this.
This was the guy from Florida last year that was suspended the entire year. The Browns drafted him in the fourth round as a game-changing wide receiver. He said he'd make the Browns proud and he would get his act together. Cited for marijuana possession already. We're not even in the regular season yet.
What's up with Browns receivers and drug issues?
Yeah, but I thought that was legal. Why are they busting his chops for that? I mean, for performance-enhancing drugs, I could see. So I don't know what the laws are in Ohio or where this guy was pulled over, but I don't know why they're doing stuff like this. Absolutely crazy.
Shane says there are three drum solos. He drank four beers this weekend playing the Thunderstruck game.
This weekend?
Oh, yeah. So I told you, it's a great game.
All right. Thanks to our friends over
there. We'll play it sometime.
Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington. Families love us forever. Feel free to contact them 24/7. They even have green options, you know, green burial options. I'd get that out. Thank you very much. And also affordable options for your pets. Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation Center. Hour one of the books. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. Get you ready for hour number two. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Everybody, you are in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. A busy Tuesday. Lots going on out there. A little bit of drizzle. 88 degrees, a little drizzle out there.
76 right now.
Oh.
88, 76.
Yeah, close enough. What was the humidity today?
Oh, it's 104%. Yeah, first time ever.
Oh, I love hot weather. I went to Arizona. I'd run circles around you and basketball.
This is never going
to
end.
Tell them what I was wearing today.
17 long sleeve shirts.
A t-shirt.
You were wearing a long sleeve Kent State shirt.
And two shirts underneath that.
And you come out of it just soaked. Yes. And you wonder why.
Well, I know why, because I wore three shirts on the hottest day of the year.
You look like the creature from the Black Lagoon out of that Orange Theory.
Does anybody in the class say anything like, why is that guy wearing a long sleeve shirt?
They care about is that you wipe down your mat.
Yeah.
I think they just look at you and say, wow. If that guy can get out of bed every day and look himself in the eye, yes, then I can do it too.
Exactly.
He was bringing it today, too. I was impressed. Rowing. He was grunting every row, which was kind of disgusting.
Were they doing the grunting?
Yeah, they were grunting
like
loudly.
Like Monica Seles.
What's your wattage? That's all I want to know.
I got it up in the 200s.
Yeah, he was, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
My fat guy. He's pretty impressive.
I want to go ahead and play good basketball this year, better than I have done the last couple of years.
Good luck with that.
You guys.
Hopefully you don't hurt your hamstring or your ankle or whatever.
Back.
The provost said, love the big vision thinking guys. Not sure about the dome or the bridge, though. But athletics will forever be a big part of the university, the community, and the state.
There you go. So, Ben and Jerry's dome.
Where are you going to play football? Where are you going to play football?
Well, first of all, you've got where they originally played it on the other side of Centennial Field, where the seats now no longer exist, but the structure is in place. I don't know where you're going to park.
So it's like a soccer practice field.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where you're going to park people there. It's always been an issue.
At Centennial Field.
Yeah, but there's never anywhere to park there because the medical center is right across the street, and then 3/4 of the spots are already taken.
We need like 20,000. Students in this school.
Do you
we need to
really?
Double it? Yeah.
This is a serious question. Yeah. Would you like to see Burlington get bigger? Would you like to see Burlington become traffic-filled big city?
I'll answer that two ways. One, it's going to happen, so it's not whether I like it or not. It is going to happen.
Well,
that's why you need
happened.
The vision. Right. So that's the first thing. Two, I don't have... Look, it's progress. I'm never against progress. That's why all the stuff going up in Williston, they're building up a new hotel, 108-room hotel?
Don't get me started about what's happened to Williston.
My wife's like, do we really need one that big? God. I go, pipe down. You know, that's called progress.
It's disgraceful.
It's not disgraceful. They got the beautiful homes up there.
Beautiful homes.
They don't have beautiful
homes? In the old horse fields, yes.
Oh, my good. So what, do you just want horse fields? Again, you know, it's called progress.
I understand.
And that's why when you have a new president coming in, you have to think about bringing back football. You have to think about bringing back baseball. You have to think about where you're going to play these games. You have to think about leaving America East. I mean, you got to grow this. You got to think about getting more than 10,000 students to 20,000. That's what every other president around every other university is thinking about right now. I promise you that.
The problem is in Burlington. The population of Burlington has been the same for 20 years. It's been 40,000 since I moved here in 1979. The problem is that it's the suburbs. That's what's causing all the traffic. I mean, getting in from Colchester, South Burlington, Essex, all those places, that's what's creating all the traffic because a lot of those people are going down the hill into Burlington or to wherever they work.
Well, that's because more people move to the suburbs. You said 40,000 now, but the surrounding area, there's like 400,000.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. Yeah. The suburban Burlington area has exploded in the last 20
years. Shane and Burlington, you're either growing or you're dying. Ain't no third direction. my friend.
I like the old horse farm there on Taft Corners.
You can't.
Well, and one thing I will say about Burlington is they're growing up, not out. I mean, there's just a finite amount of space downtown, so they're building these 12-story structures, which gets me a little nervous, but hey, whatever.
I don't know. The idea that, you know, you want Burlington to become as big as Albany the city, not so much Albany even the school, just Albany the city. I mean, look, Albany the city is the capital of New York. It's much, much bigger than Burlington, and they have an America East team. I mean, so
Well, I
mean, how big do you want Burlington to get?
You would be the first to admit that they don't get around the school in that community. Maybe that's one of the reasons. Maybe they didn't do a good job growing. See, that's exactly what I don't want to happen, is for people to be complacent and not, you know, get involved with University of Vermont Athletics.
Not going to happen here.
That's exactly what I don't want to happen, is what's happening in Albany now.
No, not going to happen here.
And believe me, it wouldn't be happening in Albany if they got bigger and better and they addressed this issue 10 years ago and joined maybe a bigger conference, because that school could have done it, I felt.
False, false, and false.
Why is that false? You think, well, you don't know that if they could have, grown it.
Well, they only worked there for how many years?
No, but you could always grow it.
Number one, the reason why it won't happen here is that...
What, in Burlington?
Yeah, in Albany, Siena is the school that everybody cares about, not UAlbany. Albany itself, the city, is filled with Siena grads, whereas UAlbany grads are all over the rest of the state, Long Island especially. They're not near Albany. The Siena grads have Albany on lockdown, so that's why Siena's got the backing of everybody and not UAlbany. UAlbany brought in a new athletic director a few years ago. They moved up in conferences in football from the Northeast Conference to the CAA, which is the conference that Joe Flacco came out of, and Kyle LaLetta now with the Giants, so the best 1AA.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, they're not drawing anybody there still.
And they certainly built the facilities. I mean, their basketball, they spent a lot of money on facilities, and it hasn't really worked.
Yeah, basketball is very iffy. Football's beautiful. Yeah. Lacrosse is good, but...
I mean, look what they do down in Middlebury, how they support that college out there.
There's a lot of alumni money coming into Middlebury, just like everyone else in that league.
There's not a lot of alumni money coming into UVM.
I understand, but...
Is Middlebury football getting 20,000? That's what I'd like to...
Are you trying to tell me we shouldn't have more than 10,000 students at UVM? That's your cutoff number there? Is that what you're saying?
You want to double the amount of students at UVM? Can you imagine what that hill is going to look like?
There's 13,000 students already at UVM, including graduates.
Where do you put another 8,000-9,000 students?
And I promise you, if we look back 10 years ago, there probably wasn't more than 10. It's just, there's going to be 20,000 whether you like it or not. That's not me predicting it. It's going to happen. So, you know, get with the times or you know, move, because you got to make room for progress, guys. I don't understand.
See, I think that's a totally separate argument. The idea of... the school itself adding more students has no bearing on me for the most part, okay?
Although I totally disagree. I think the number of students you have in a school, first of all, smaller schools are D3. It goes by student enrollment.
Not necessarily.
Yes, for some of them. A lot of the small ones are D3. Believe me, I went through this in hockey. You know, when you see less than like 5,000 enrollment or something, or 6,000 enrollment.
Siena's got 3,500. My high school had more students than Siena. But anyways, the students, yes, the school itself should want more students. That will bring in more revenue, more money, $7,000 more in tuition money.
Right.
That's good. If the school's going to agree to pay to find a place to house all these kids,
exactly,
then that's fine, too.
There's nowhere to put them.
No, we're doing that now. We just built a 200-apartment complex downtown.
Right. That's not student house. That's not campus housing. That's somebody in Burlington building that for the students.
Right. Do you know what the vacancy rate is?
That's not affiliated with a school.
For apartments in Burlington? It's practically zero. There's nowhere to put them.
Well, there's a lot of space down where Burlington College used to be, but that's bought up anyway, so forget about that.
You can't walk to class from Burlington College. That's North Ave.
Look, when you grow, you just add. Like they added at UVM. When you add the arena, you add more dorms, you add more housing.
Where are they going to put that space at the UVM campus?
Rich, I don't think that is even our concern. I think we're having two separate discussions, and I want to try to rein it back to what those are. One, I'm with you, Arnie. The school should want to have more students. The school should want to have more students. If the school can find out a place to house them all, then that's fine. And for the most part, the student body is contained to campus itself or the immediate downtown. They're not impacting all of our individual lives. I'm not running into UVM students down in Essex. That's not happening. You're not seeing them in Colchester. Right. You're not seeing them in Williston.
True.
It has very little impact on all of us. So if the school wants to admit 7,000 more kids and it will pay on its own dime to house them all, then so be it. Let them do it. As far as the town itself getting as big as Boston like you want it to.
Oh, not as Boston.
Then
slow down.
I don't think that is realistic.
No, I didn't say
as big as
Boston.
If the school itself wants to grow its student body, 100% let them do it.
All you have to do is let's look back 20 years, 15 years, 10 years, 5 years. I bet you I'm right that we had less students enrollment at UVM than we do now.
Correct.
So, and we probably didn't have a lot of housing either, but we've dealt with the problem as we've gotten bigger.
Well, we've dealt with it by having a 0% vacancy rate. I mean, the problem, too, is Lake Champlain provides a western boundary for the city where you can't put any people. There's only a finite amount of space in Burlington.
Real quick, first-time texter, Middlebury Endowment is almost how many times out of UVM? $467 million to $1 billion. UVM has almost four times as many students. Don't expect the endowment to grow with more students. That's exactly what I was expecting.
Oh, but you've seen how much it costs to go to Middlebury. Those people are not poor.
No, that's a lot of money.
And they're not poor when they leave Middlebury either.
Yes, Brady.
By the way, there's the graph, okay? UVM student body by year. Okay. Steadily going up through all of time, not going down.
No, I said going up.
You said it's down. You said it's down from what it was years ago.
No.
You just said it was up.
Yeah, I said if you went back 20 years ago, we have more students now than we did 20, and it goes up 15, 10, 5.
Okay.
That's my point. We've added students, and we've always dealt with the housing issue, so we'll just deal with it when we add the other 7,000.
I just don't understand what that has to do with campus athletics, which is what we were talking about.
Well, because the reason it does, because now we want to charge students and stuff like that. We want to figure out how to get the students to the games and the basketball. You got to get more students in here. I always felt 10,000 undergrad students is not enough for a major campus. I felt if you had 20,000, then you could really go ahead, fill up the basketball, go ahead, have football, go ahead, have baseball. That's the difference. You know, when you add students for enrollment. At least I thought it did. Brady, who's on the line?
John in Colchester.
John in Colchester. Yo, 101.3 ESPN. What's up, John?
Hey, I just wanted to call about UVM. I don't think this area can really contain much of a larger student population, and a number of reasons as to why. One is, I mean, the infrastructure to get downtown is miserable. And you put more kids trying to cross that road from the dormitories to the main campus, I mean, it's already a nightmare. Those kids just walk out in the middle of traffic. They don't care that cars are going by. I mean, they've got to build a bridge or something across that road.
Well, but a lot of kids walk down there anyway. But go ahead.
And the other thing is this climate can't really support baseball or football. Baseball is, I mean, they were losing $5 million a year. The school's already $25 million in the hole. It really can't support that environment. Trust me, I love baseball. Mm-hmm. I would love to go see the Catamounts play baseball, but They just can't play a game up here until mid to late April, and by that point, the season's halfway over. So they're going down to Florida. They're not studying. They're not student-athletes anymore. They're then now semi-pro baseball players. They're not really good at that anyways. So, I mean, it's not a sustainable operation to have athletics have a baseball team.
And Brady brought up that point, and I appreciate the call. Brady, what and I'm just going to ask you on that. What about the other schools up here in the Northeast? As I brought up St. John's, I don't know if they're still good anymore. I'm
St.
Not.
John's is good.
How do they work it out?
Yeah,
are they indoors?
Same thing with the University of Maine.
Well, number one, St. John's is good. Playing on Long Island, what you would need is an all-new facility that's turf field. That's the first thing you would need, where you don't have to deal with dirt and you don't have to deal with snow. That's the first thing. You would need that, so it would require a major facility overhaul. You wouldn't be able to play at Centennial Field because Centennial Field would either have to go away and you build a new field, or you turf out Centennial Field. I imagine there'd be pretty significant pushback to altering Centennial Field. That's what you would need to have a home field up here, okay? It's a huge budgetary demand on a university. When you're Albany and you're getting snowed out every weekend, you're traveling to Florida, you're traveling to Georgia, Virginia to play every weekend, and then all your home games up here that are in conference, they're getting moved all around the place anyways because no one can ever play at their home field. It's just not worth it. They're not going to win a national championship. Unless you're the cream of the crop in the conference, you're not going to win a conference championship. You don't have a major TV deal for those sports to help bump up revenue. And for the most part, you're not getting players drafted. So as much as I love baseball and as much as I would want it here, I don't understand the point of bringing it back. There's not enough of a benefit. Again, when it was here, I wouldn't have gotten rid of it. But now that it's gone, I don't see enough tangible benefits to bring it back.
Well, St. Mike's is a classic example of the problems you run into. They basically play their first 20, and I don't know the exact amount, but 20, 25 games in Florida because they have to. They play double and triple headers every single day while they're down there. Then they come back, and their first Northeast 10 games are all snowed or rained out, or they're freezing, and it's just not a good – it doesn't work. I mean, it works to a point because they eventually get the games in, but at what cost?
I don't know how it works for St. John's. I don't know how it works for
– turf in Long Island is 15 degrees warmer than here.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
Well, but there's still bad weather. You know, you can't play in the rain. You can't play in the snow. Look, if the weather's such a factor, I don't even know how high school baseball. We talked about that, remember?
Well, that's a mess.
You thought about changing it to another semester, to the fall. Spring semester.
Baseball should be played in the fall in these climates. I understand why it's not. One, you're going to crush football if you do that. They're going to crush each other because you're going to have kids having to choose. That's not good, especially in a state where the roster sizes are so small. And then you're also, I run into issues. I don't want to see a guy play, you know, summer baseball and then go into the high school season. That doesn't work, but that's more me personally.
Tyler sent a text that it would take me the rest of the show to read, so I'll probably have to shorten that down a little bit, Brady, but he's against adding. You know, you looked up, what was the enrollment for UVM 10 years ago? So, you know, he says he doesn't think that they could add another 7,000 students. Tyler, they're going to add another 7,000 students. Might not be this year, might not be in 5 years, but it'll be right around 5, 6, 7 years from now. It's going to go ahead and get up to that. You'll wait and see.
Yeah, that Maine's straight around the hill. That should be fun. Yeah.
In 2010, it's exactly as it is now.
So it didn't grow in
2010, it actually then went down from 2010 to 2015. Wow. And now it's working back up to a spot where it was even.
I wonder why that is. So
Recession. That's why.
The recession?
Yes.
Well, I think we're having a tougher time for colleges now. I think, I wonder what it was like when we were going, my friend.
I don't know, but it ain't cheap to go to groovy UV, I'll tell you that.
There's no doubt about that.
Especially out of state.
When you were going to college, Arnie, there were...
82 to 86.
Yeah, it was about 7,800 people at UVM.
Wow. It was very easy to get into college.
My Linden tuition was just over $1,000.
I think I got into Harvard.
Things that won't happen in your life. Arnie at Harvard.
Brady, we didn't get to the OVJ story. I know you want to talk about that. We will get to that and Michael Kay. Who's coming up next, though?
Jason Fitz. I like talking to this guy. It's our 101.3 ESPN Fantasy Football Week. We'll talk to him about that. But he was also, before a sports talk radio guy, he was a Grammy Award-winning musician for the band Perry. How the hell do you leave Grammy wins for this business?
And I'm getting chewed up by Tyler and Travis and Milton and everybody out there on the Town Fair Tire text line. Keep them coming. We'll have Jason Fitz coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back here in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It is 101.3 ESPN Fantasy Football Week, talking to a different insider every single day this week, trying to get you ready to bring home your league trophy this year. On day two, we go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line to bring in Jason Fitz, co-host of Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, and a former fiddle player for the band Perry, which has won Grammy Awards, and we'll talk fantasy football too. Jason, how are you?
Man, I'm fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Look, we'll get to fantasy football. I got all kinds of questions there, but how the heck does a Grammy Award-winning artist get into sports radio?
You know, the funny thing for me is I was really lucky that I got to live that dream, and it was all I'd ever done. I started playing the violin when I was 4, and I was 8 hours a day of practice by the time I was 8. It's all I ever did my entire life growing up, and I finally made it, you know, and our busiest year, I was gone 300 days on tour. And I came home from the end of that year, and I said to my wife, I said, you know, I'm really good at what I do, and I've worked my whole life to get here, and I appreciate it, but I don't love it. And that's a weird realization when you've worked your whole life towards one goal. And my wife said, well, if I asked 100 of your friends what you really love, what would the answer be? And I said, sports. And she said, all right, find a way to talk about sports. So I took a microphone I'd been using for, you know, cutting string sections and fiddle parts, and I sat in my car because I felt like an idiot, and I didn't want anyone to hear me. And I did a 5-minute podcast, and I put it up on my Facebook page for my friends, and that was about 5 years ago at this point. And I realized I loved it. It was addictive for me, so I ripped the whole thing apart, wrote a business plan, and then started getting musicians to talk about football and football guys to talk about music. And I grinded. I mean, it didn't matter where we were on tour. I sat in coffee shops in Norway trying to upload an episode talking about football, and I did it every week religiously, and I just kept pounding on doors to see if anybody would eventually care, and I got really lucky that some people took note.
Now, we talk about, you know, youth athletics and youth sports and the culture around it and the idea of specialization and people playing one sport their whole life just kind of burning out on that sport. Is that how you felt in the music world?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think, you know, specialization is really a requirement in classical music, which is how I grew up. I got into Juilliard when I was 10. I played Carnegie Hall when I was 10. Like, I was, when I say 8 hours a day, like, I went to public school. I just got up at
3:30 in the morning and practice as much before I could before school, and then I would come home, do my homework. I got to watch one 30-minute TV show, which was Transformers, because I'm old, and I would watch Transformers, and then I'd practice until it was time for bed. And, you know, I did that all the way up until, you know, I was in my late teens, and then I sort of had a realization that, man, it was just such a grind, and I was just done. I was burnt out. So the good news for me is when I moved to Nashville, I played in the symphony and played in recording sessions, and everybody from Matchbox 20 to Alan Jackson Records, and played on all that stuff, and then started touring in country. I at least had a different way to do what I was great at doing. So the difficult part for athletes and specialization is, what do you do? You grow up a football kid and you put all that work in, and when you're 17 or 18, you burn out. It's not like there's a different spin on football you can do, unless it's talking about football and doing all that sorts of stuff, which is why, and this is a side rant we can talk about another day, but it's why I'm a big proponent of allowing kids in college to major, like everybody talks about music majors. Most schools that you study music in, you can major just in your instrument. So, like, I was a violin performance major. I think that in today's world, there should be a football major where you can learn not only the game, but how to break down film, how to be a trainer, how to you know, help guys get better, all of these things, so that you can still work in the sport you love, even if you don't necessarily make it or even if you burn out.
Who is the best country music act to talk sports with? Luke Bryan, Florida Georgia Line, Cole Swindell. Who we got? Who are you talking sports with out in the music scene back in the day?
That is a great question. I think, honestly, when you get to college football, they all get pretty fired up. If you're talking all sports, Darius is right at the top of the list. Eric Church is right at the top of the list, because those guys are every bit as into college basketball as they are college football. If you're going to go just college football, man, it might be Aldean. Aldean is such a Georgia nut. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. The cross sections between country music and college football, particularly, are undeniable.
Jason Fitz, co-host Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, former fiddle player with the band Perry, with us here on the Huddle 101.3 ESPN. So, what's the biggest thing you've learned being in sports every single day? Or maybe something that surprised you?
Well, I think the biggest lesson, and this is like the schematics, you'll understand this, being in it, when I first did my first ever radio show, because my first shot at radio was in Nashville, where I've lived for so long, co-host of the morning radio show, and a guy came up to me that was a consultant, and he said, remember one thing, your job's not to talk about what you want to talk about, your job's to talk about what everybody wants to hear about that day. So you got to find the biggest stories to your audience, talk about that. And that's the one thing that I always tell people when they think, man, I want to get into this, and I you know, I could crush it every day. You do have a reminder that, you know, I grew up a diehard Raiders fan. I would love to sit on Spain and Fitz every night right now and just break down what's happening in the training camp battles for Oakland. That's not what most of our audience cares about. So my job is to identify what does matter and then try and talk about what the most people want to talk about. So it's much more of a skill than I think a lot of people realize when they're sitting in their house saying, man, I want to do that every day. It's as you well know, it's tough to do 3 hours, 4 hours a day, every single day, and keep it fresh and keep people engaged.
Now, as I said, it is 101.3 ESPN Fantasy Football Week, so let's turn the conversation there. You've hosted a bunch of college football shows, so you're in tune with the guys that are younger in the NFL. So what do we think rookie-wise? Who are some rookies you're looking at fantasy-wise that could have some big impacts?
I'm not just saying this because of where you're located. I'm just saying that I think that we do have to keep an eyeball on, and I know this is crazy, but Sony Michel is a great young running back, and I think the Patriots got a heck of a pick there when they picked him up. I don't know that he isn't poised to have a good opportunity to give you some points and unexpected points, because we're not used to necessarily looking at the running back position specifically for the Patriots as somebody, but if you're talking about a running back that you can get a ton of value on, I think he's there. Obviously, everybody's going to want to talk about Saquon, and Saquon's going to be a beast. That's an easy one. But Sony Michel is somebody to keep an eye on. That being said, like I said, Saquon is sort of the guy, if you're looking at your early round picks, picks in this year's draft, Saquon's the guy that I think that the statement of drafting Saquon was the Giants' way of saying, look, we don't have a quarterback we necessarily love right now, so we're going to give him a weapon, but we also didn't love a quarterback in this year's draft, right? So if they had loved Sam Darnold, they would have taken Sam Darnold. They didn't. So to me, they took Saquon as a way of saying, okay, we're going to hold off and see what, you know, what the future looks like, and we're going to buy a little more time before we pick a quarterback. So that's why I'm high on Saquon. Conversely, that's why I'm low on Sam Darnold, not just because we don't know what he'll get when he finally gets into the game, but the fact is a quarterback-needy team in New York passed on a quarterback knowing fully well that another quarterback-needy team in New York might take him. That's a statement.
It's fascinating you say that Sony Michel is a guy that you're buying, because that's a guy I would be selling in fantasy drafts. One, the knee injury. Two, just the history of running back use in New England with it being kind of a revolving door. Are there any other rookies that you see as being overvalued? Because I think Michelle's being overvalued right now.
That's funny that you think he's, and I get it. You know, I get that, that on the revolving door process is something in New England. The question always becomes, is the revolving door process out of necessity, or is the revolving door process sort of just the way they choose to do business? Because when you think about it, most of the guys that leave the Patriots at some point, whenever they leave the Patriots, it's not like they suddenly blow into some new version of themselves, right? So I think there is a piece of it, and that's why I'm even cautious. You know, Deion Lewis goes to the Titans, and Titans fans all over the place are saying, oh, my God, Deion Lewis is going to get me here and crush it. You don't see running backs leave New England and take some gigantic leap forward. You know, they're sort of the master of system running backs, right? That's why I think Sony Michel can actually separate, because I think he's better than a system running back. So that's one we can, we'll see how that plays out. As far as other rookies that I think, I'm just cautious. I'm cautious with rookie wide receivers in general, because it's so difficult for a rookie wide receiver to come in, immediately make impact. So I tend to avoid them, especially in fantasy football. In general, from fandom, I think you have to look at it, and I'll go back to my beloved Raiders. Amari Cooper was supposed to be the second coming. You have to remember that you just don't know what these guys are going to be at running or wide receiver specifically. They seem to hit a wall 11, 12 games in. It's difficult for me. So, you know, I'm sort of out on a lot of that first-round talent from a fantasy perspective.
Are there any fantasy rules you follow in terms of where you're going to get players? Like, I look at fantasy baseball and I say, okay, I want as many Cleveland Indians as I can, because the rest of the AL Central stinks and they're just going to just beef up all their statistics doing that. Are there any rules you follow like that in fantasy football? Hey, I'm staying away from this team. I'm looking at that division. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I have my personal rule that I never take somebody that plays for the Raiders, because I found myself a few years ago jumping up and down in a sports bar because the Raiders scored an 80-yard touchdown, and I was just ecstatic until I found out that Darren McFadden didn't score, and I had started McFadden that day, and then I was angry, and I realized I never want that feeling. So I sort of stayed away from that. This year particularly, if there is one area I'm looking to sort of be cautious with, it's the AFC South. I think the defenses in the AFC South are better, spare the Colts, are better than we expect them to be. And it's sort of a trap, because the AFC South has a particularly easy schedule. So it's easy to want to go in and look at Mariota, for example, as a quarterback and say, hey, could get some production out of him. I think Mariota could take a step forward as a quarterback, but the Texans defense, the Jags defense are both very, very good. And we don't know what the offense is really going to look like under an entire new coaching staff. So when it comes across the board in the AFC South, the defenses are so good for the Texans and the Jags particularly, and I think the Titans have the pieces to be a very good defense. I'm staying away from any offensive production there if I could possibly avoid it.
Jason Fitz, you can hear him on Spain and Fitz on ESPN Radio, and a former Grammy Award-winning musician for the band Perry. Jason, we appreciate it, and best of luck as you continue to assimilate into our world.
Man, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for having me.
Good to hear from him, man. That's one thing I always wanted to do, is play a musical instrument. I just don't have the talent for something.
I want
to
win a Grammy.
No, I don't want to win a Grammy. I just want to learn how to play the saxophone, but I can't even do that.
Well, you can start now that you're 71. What are you, 65?
Yeah. And you think the saxophone would be right up my alley. You need a lot of hot air. You know what I mean? Just blow, blow, blow.
That is definitely the first fiddle player we've ever had on the show, I would venture to say.
Imagine being so good at two different things that you can just win a Grammy and then just leave and go to an entirely new profession and be good at that. Imagine that.
Yeah,
I can't. I'm still trying to work on the radio part. Yeah. I mean, unbelievable.
I'm trying to get good at one thing.
Yeah, exactly. Brady, we got some time. Do you want to do anything on Colin and what he said about Odell Beckham or on Michael Kay?
We don't really have that much time.
All right, I'll tell you what, when we come back, we'll get to that, and we'll get to the Chargers as we look at 32 teams in 33 days. Look at the L.A. Chargers. Don't say the San Diego Chargers, please. All that coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. Good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. Show just flying by. Got a great funny story for last story. Stan, I think you're going to like that. But first, 32 teams in 32 days as we take a look at the LA Chargers. Do you know why we wait till now to do the 32 teams in 32 days?
Because there's 32 days until the opener?
No, I meant this time of the day. Because if we did this 2 hours ago, everything would have been fine and dandy. Yeah. Now that we do it 2 hours later, we found out LA Chargers defensive end Joey Bosa.
You guys
heard of him? Yeah. Suffered a left foot injury.
Well, they said nothing serious.
They say nothing serious. But I just read that. I'm like, suffered a left foot injury. Nothing serious. The guy did hobble off. Couldn't finish practice. And he was in a lot of pain. Yeah, they say it's nothing serious. I'll be the judge of that, Brady.
You said Sony Michel's injury was nothing. It's going to keep him out 10 days. Right. So you got to give Bosa the benefit of the doubt.
Shows you I was wrong on that. I'm not going to fool me once. Shame on you. Fool me twice.
Still, Bosa's, he had 12 and a half sacks last year in that defense. They're desperately going
to
need him.
He's going to be okay, but it goes to show you how something like that in the blink of an eye, you know, in 2 hours, boom, Joey Bosa goes down. You know, they put the red jersey on the quarterbacks. I put up the red jersey on him and said, don't even get near him.
Well, the Chargers also lost Hunter Henry, their star tight end for the year. They've lost the starting defensive back for the end. Chargers injuries already piling up. This is a team that people are expecting to come out and win the AFC West. They think they're better than Kansas City with a rookie quarterback. They think they're better than Oakland. They think they're better than Denver also. Biggest question I have for this team is, one, Philip Rivers.
They were snake bit all the last two years.
Can Philip Rivers continue to play at a high level? Yeah.
Well, they better start off something other than 0-4.
Well, they've lost every game every way imaginable.
They did. And, I mean, I'll give them credit. I think they won 9 of their last 12 or whatever it was. But still, you got to figure out a way to not start 0-4. And obviously, that's going to be very much up to Rivers.
I like Melvin Gordon, but didn't he have an off year after his rookie year? Because he had such a great run his rookie year?
Yes.
So, you know, obviously they'll have to get more production out of him. They've got other weapons.
Keenan Allen.
They've got weapons. Yeah. It's just that damn slow start that cost them. And losing, they lost to the Dolphins on a missed field goal, I believe. You just can't be losing games like that and starting the season on that. Season over when you do that.
Yeah, no, and Keenan Allen is back. Antonio Gates, I guess, wants to play, but
I saw that.
The Chargers. Well, so, yeah. But, I mean, he's kind of come and gone. Come and gone. He's been playing forever, but, I mean, you can't count on him anymore. Wouldn't it be fun to watch a playoff game in a 27,000-seat soccer stadium?
It was a couple of years ago. The Chargers, I think, lost 7 games by a touchdown or less.
Wow.
Last year, they have all the injuries, so you're right. They've been a snake bit franchise. They're a team with a lot of expectations. They're with a team with a lot of talent on the outside. So a lot of talent at all the skill positions, really. I like what the Chargers are doing. I'm going to pick them to win the AFC West, too, but the injury is certainly not a good position to be in to start when you lose your starting tight end.
Wide open division. I mean, Denver, Kansas City, Oakland, Chargers. Oakland a couple of years ago until Derek Carr got hurt. It's been nothing but downhill after that.
Same with Denver.
A couple of years ago, they were on top of the world, or when they had Peyton Manning. Now look at them, and it's just really wide open. You can take any one of those four teams. You like the Chargers very well, could be that. So there you go, 32 teams in 33 days. Brady, what is going on with Michael Kay? I saw this, and I didn't hear the original comment by Michael Kay, but I saw the tweets that Michael sent out to him saying, look, if you mistook what I said, I'm sorry. I never would go ahead and question anybody's injury. I look forward to speaking to you face-to-face.
Michael Kay, the broadcaster for the Yankees, had this to say as a guest on a radio show yesterday, talking after the Yankees were swept by the Red Sox.
I thought Stanton did okay during the weekend and all that, but, I mean, when you're playing Luke Voit and Shane Robinson in important games, you know, shame on the Yankees for not having the depth, but again, shame on guys like Jacoby Ellsbury for not getting healthy. Shame on Clint Frazier for not getting healthy. But again, you can't make them get healthy, but if those guys are available, it's a completely different animal.
Shame on Clint Frazier.
Yeah.
So Clint Frazier's been out. Not the whole year, but he's been out for various parts of the year with concussion symptoms, dealing with post-concussion symptoms as well, trying to get healthy. Clint Frazier responded to Michael Kay on Twitter and said, basically, we haven't spoken about my condition all year. You have no idea what's going on. don't talk about me. That's essentially the paraphrasing of it.
And then he did, if you look up what Michael Kay said, Michael Kay came back and said, look, if you misunderstood, I was lumping you together, which is baloney, but now hearing it now, he actually said exactly what he said. You know, how could you get better from a concussion real quick?
All he has to do is add the word it's. You know, it's a shame Clint Frazier is not healthy.
Right.
And it would have solved the whole thing.
Exactly.
You can't put shame on a player with a concussion who's not ready to come back.
And there's nothing you could do. It's not like you can, with an injury, you can, you know, get the, what do they call the electrodes in your, like, leg or something? You know how you...
Stim.
Yeah, you do that to make you heal faster. There's nothing you could do to heal faster from a concussion. Am I wrong on that? Or you just have to kind of get a lot of rest or something?
Well, some people obviously come back quicker than others.
Yeah, but is there something you can do?
I don't think so. I'm not a doctor.
No,
but
if there is, I bet Clint Frazier would love to try it. I mean, it's
well,
not
I'm sure
like,
he's
I
doing
mean,
everything possible.
But I mean, for him to say shame on Clint Frazier for not coming back, I mean, it's not like he wants to be on the DL. No.
I mean, Michael Kay said he was being facetious, said that he was being, you know, kind of playfully over-exaggerating. But I think Frazier has every right to be upset about this. Sure. This is a guy, trust me, Frazier is not happy to be stuck in AAA. Frazier wants to be playing. Don't you think that with Aaron Judge on the DL, Clint Frazier knows that this is his opportunity and his chance to be up here and start for the New York Yankees, which is what he wants. He is not thrilled about being stuck in AAA, and you knew that when the team went out and acquired Giancarlo Stanton that somebody was going to be the odd man out, and it was more than likely going to be Clint Frazier because Aaron Hicks had ended up playing so well last year, but this is his opportunity to run with a starting job for 3 weeks while Judge is out, and he's not able to do that. I guarantee you he wants to be out there playing.
You know, this is the second group of people that said that, too. Correct me if I'm wrong, didn't WFAN's Midday show say this, something to that effect also about how come he's not coming back quicker from a concussion and they look like a bunch of morons? Well, you know, what the hell's going on here?
Well, that's the thing.
I can't figure out.
Look, if he hurt his knee or something or had a toe injury or something that you could potentially put a somewhat of a timeline on, then that would be a little less shameful of a thing to say. But to not only say shame on him for not coming back, but to have it be targeted at a guy with a concussion, I mean, that's just the Ellsbury thing you could sort of push aside because I think with the amount of money he's making, people, and I mean, obviously the Yankees are just so frustrated with his situation, it just never seems to end. But with the Frazier situation, it's a completely different animal.
You know, when we talk about Pedroia, we never say shame on Pedroia for being injured and not coming back. We just said, look, he's not coming back, or he is coming back.
Tell me he doesn't want to be back on the field. He's probably the most impossible guy to deal with
now. Yeah, we never said shame on people for being injured and you don't want to come back. We just said, well, hey, Pedroia's down. They better find a replacement at second base. And, you know, let's have, you know, like when you say about running backs, if somebody goes down, better have a replacement. So we never say shame on them for being hurt, though. Or
no, the things we've said about Pedroia is simply that his contract is bad. It's never been anything about Pedroia the player. It's never been anything about Pedroia the person or Pedroia's work ethic. It's been shame on the Red Sox for giving him that contract and putting themselves in this unfortunate situation. Look, Michael Kay was out of line. Even as a joke, he was out of line.
He was out
and
of line.
And if it's true that Michael Kay hasn't spoken to Clint Frazier all year, then I find that interesting also because Clint Frazier has been up with the Yankees this season. I mean, the broadcasters make a habit of going all around the batting cage and talking to everybody. Why has Michael Kay not spoken to Clint Frazier all year?
Rich, you do play-by-play.
It's a very fine line that you have to walk, and most of the good ones can walk it. You've got to be very, very careful about how you criticize players.
Yeah, but you go down and talk to the players anyway, don't you, before batting practice?
Well, I mean, in the minor leagues, I was down on the field for every batting practice just goofing with guys. I mean, but we were friendly with each other. I would imagine at the major league level, it's a lot more pressure, obviously. I don't know, Yankee Stadium and Centennial Field, same thing.
He was out of line. I think he was just trying to be sports talk funny guy or sports talk hot opinion guy.
Yeah.
And he lumped when he was going through the injuries, he went Frazier second. So he went with Jacoby first. So I think he kind of just lumped them together. Am I wrong? I don't know. But
You change one or two words in that and it becomes perfectly fine.
Yeah, it wasn't that bad, but I see where Frazier got upset about it. I could certainly see his.
Oh, I absolutely see why he's upset, especially in a season that's been so frustrating for Frazier. He got hurt in spring training when he was thought that maybe he had a chance to win a job on this roster. He gets hurt in spring training, gets a concussion, diving for a ball in spring training down in Florida. He gets injured during the season as well. This is his opportunity where he knows he could be playing and starting. He's not able to because of these concussion-like symptoms. I absolutely understand how frustrated he is. And then to have the team broadcaster throw you under the bus unnecessarily. Yeah. I get it.
At the end of losing four straight games, including the fourth one, which was as frustrating as a game you could possibly lose, the timing, I mean, you talk about players saying the wrong thing in the heat of battle. In this case, it was a broadcaster.
Yeah, that probably made things, I would say, a little worse, probably a lot worse. That they threw that in there. Brady, what is coming up on Champaign Valley game night tonight, by the way?
Short show. We'll give you the Red Sox lineups against the Jays right around 6:20. Before that, we'll get more again into the UVM situation as they'll have a new president in 2019.
They should sweep Toronto and sweep Baltimore.
And Chris Sale is going to pitch on Sunday.
Nice.
That is breaking news.
Oh, look at that.
Just in time to face the dreaded Baltimore Orioles.
But get that clip where Rich said it was over. Get that clip.
Let's stop. I said it sucks. Those were my exact words.
Last story standing. It's a good one. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN. All right, I like this story. I don't know if you heard this this morning. A substitute teacher from New Jersey. Did you hear that story?
No.
A New Jersey woman. She's a substitute teacher living, obviously, in New Jersey. She was at the Wawa. Do you know what the Wawa is?
Yes, it's a store.
Yeah, it's
there's a bunch of them in Philly.
Gas station type thing. Yeah. With the,
they also
with
have
the
sheets, which I prefer. But
wow. Well, she was at the Wawa's. She is a very kind lady. She always has had a chance to jump at a chance when somebody needs money to pay her forward. There was there was a guy there, looked down and out, didn't have any money. She jumped forward to pay it forward for his gas and some food for him. He went up to thank her, said, "What is your name, young man?" He said, "My name is Keith." That would be Keith Urban. You may have heard of him. the country singer. Why does not he have money? Why didn't he have any money on it? Don't you have a debit card or something? What the hell's going on?
How do you not know it's Keith Urban?
Well, she said,
most,
you know,
recognizable guy on the planet.
Well, she says, you know, I wouldn't know him if he walked up to me and said, "Want to play one-on-one basketball?" I have no idea. "What's your name?" "Keith." "Hi, I'm Arnie. Let's play." The lady said, "You know, you look like Keith Urban a little bit." He goes, "Well, that's because I am." If you're Keith Urban, do you not have a debit card? I mean, they take debit cards and credit cards at the Wawa. Do they not? It's not cash only there, Brady. Is it or what?
I don't know. I've been to Wawa ever.
No, it's a store. Of course they take credit cards
and
debit cards.
Doesn't Keith Urban have somebody else pay the bills for him? One of his roadies or whatever that's on the bus? I would assume there was a massive bus that pulled up.
Well, I guess he was in his car, but why are you driving around? And by the way, he had his bodyguard with him. Didn't the bodyguard have money either?
Exactly.
I don't understand. These guys are worth millions of dollars. There's no debit card,
Nicole
nothing.
Kidman, isn't she with him? And they had money together.
I have no
idea.
They
might have a buck or two between the two of them.
You see, I don't even know. Is that his girl?
I think so.
I don't know. Brady?
I don't know.
You threw that in? I thought Nicole Kidman still with Tom Cruise, as far as I know.
I think Keith Urban and Nicole Kidman have been married for a while. Guys, yes? We have a bunch of...
I don't know.
Yes, since 2006.
Yeah. Yes.
So there you go.
There's a rumor they have a place in Grand Isle, but that's for another day.
She took a picture of him, and that picture's gone viral now, of the substitute teacher with Keith Urban.
Nice.
Keith, get some money. You know, keep a debit card on you. You know, by the way, I gave you the best joke today, and you just let it fly by.
What?
You know, tomorrow, you know, I'm going to be out at Plattsburgh for a Crush It Okemo weekend. What's the name of the place, Brady?
It's called Oliver Ridley's.
Oliver Ridley's.
Great
and
place.
I said, isn't that a Beatles song?
Yes.
And that's Eleanor Rigby.
No, but I
mean, that's pretty funny
come
stuff.
Come on, I fake chuckled. You never laugh at any of the jokes I think are
funny.
No,
but that deserved more than just a fake chuckle.
A fake loud chuckle? Would that have been better?
Maybe a fake hearty laugh.
Okay.
I mean, that was a good one. Eleanor Rigby, Oliver Ridley.
Yeah, that is pretty close.
That was
Oliver
good.
Ridley, Olive Ridley's.
Oh, you see,
Oliver.
Now you made me mispronounce the name then. Damn you.
All I know is that's a fun place.
I thought it was a good one, and you don't even give me credit on
that. That's pretty sad when a guy needs that kind of reinforcement on his humor.
Well, I do. I thought that was a good one. I've been working on that one.
You need it on your basketball game. I know.
Wow.
That.
When does that start, by the way?
It starts up soon.
When school starts.
Yeah.
So we can get our daily updates
every
day.
Year five.
Ugh.
Year five of it. Brady, what's coming up on Champaign Valley game night tonight?
Red Sox lineups at 6:20. Also, congratulations again. A Colchester native has won the CrossFit Games. Matt Frazier, winner there. So that's very cool. And in Champaign Valley game night, we will also talk more about the UVM situation and how it relates to athletics.
All right. For intern Colton and intern Connor. Did I get that right?
What?